I think you being offline is your most appealing trait, and me being online is my least appealing trait. I think this is the duality of the show, the two genders, two online and two offline.
I like that my best thing is what I'm not doing.
No, we're building intimacy already, Aubrey. You feel great. What is your intimacy-related tagline?
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Maintenance Phase, the podcast that's testing the rate hypothesis.
What?
I can't make you love me if you don't.
Oh, God, R-A-I-T-T. Jesus. How am I so bad at these?
Also, listen, not since the SAS report.
Oh, my God.
Such a fucking clunker.
That one, I blamed you for that. I blame me for this. This is terrible.
I'm Aubrey Gordon, but you already knew that.
And I'm Michael Hobbs, and you know that. And today, we are doing something lighter because after our last bonus episode, one of the comments was like, I love you guys and this is good, but like, can you do something fun? Because like, it's been really dark.
What happened to the Bachelor episodes?
For like 2 months. And we were like, we cannot agree more.
Dude, 2 months minimum. Two months to 4 years, depending on who you ask.
We're trying to lighten up a little bit, both for ourselves and for people who listen to the show, so it's not fucking gloom all the time. We were like, ooh, should we do like a media roundup? And then we're like, oh, the media reflects the reality of the world.
I was like, look, I can't talk about MIA's 5G blocking fashion line for a full hour.
Or like the RFK Jr. like sexual assault allegations. It's like, no, we're going to do something cute and fun. So here we are.
The thing that we're going to try and do today that's cute and fun is fall in love with each other.
One of the most common pieces of feedback that we get from people is like one of the main reasons that they listen to the show is for the crackling sexual tension. And so today, we're leaning into it. It's like a Jim and Pam thing. And yes. We're finally going to address it.
But Jim is a very large gay lady and Pam is a very small gay man.
I like that you clocked that I am the Pam in the relationship. I think that's completely accurate. So we are doing this, I mean, kind of absurd 36 questions to fall in love thing, which went viral in 2015, which is kind of like in keeping with the show, like two 40-year-olds.
I was like, gonna say, going to say, we are really dating ourselves.
It's just like a series of questions made to foster intimacy between two people. I actually like read the original study and like some of the surrounding literature, and we'll talk about that later. But the purpose of this and sort of the way that it's been framed for the public is like, if you want to like build more intimacy with a stranger, you basically sit down for a couple hours and like do these 36 questions. And by the end of the 36 questions, you will like feel much, much closer to that person. And so because we are uncomfortable with parasocial relationships, we thought we would deepen the parasocial relationship.
Yeah, totally. We thought we would walk into the fire.
Yeah.
Okay. So question one, given the choice of anyone in the world, whom would you want as a dinner guest?
Dinner guest.
I feel like mine would all be like either comedians or women soccer players.
So it would be Megan Rapinoe and like Ali Wong.
First of all, how dare you? It's Rapinoe.
Oh, God.
Second of all, she plays for Seattle and she will be at no dinner party of mine.
Oh.
Just kidding.
I keep forgetting that people who care about sports care about like different teams. I mean, like, she's okay. A sports person. So you like a sports. She does sports and you like sports.
No, listen, like get some like amazing U.S. women's national team players in there. And then also like Nicole Byer.
Yeah.
Have a grand old time.
When I moved to Britain, a friend of mine as a gift gave me like a Liverpool like zip up hoodie thing. It was like their jersey, whatever. And like, I thought that British people would be super impressed with me just for like wearing a soccer thing.
Like,
they'll
no.
think I'm cool because I'm wearing a soccer thing. And then the one time I wore it in London, they're like, why are you supporting Liverpool? I'm like, I don't know what that is. I don't know what supporting means as a concept.
You didn't get punched?
Yeah, I know. I actually kind of deserved to, but I think I was like so dumb that they were like, all right, he doesn't count.
Mike, are you ready for another question?
All right, let's do it.
Before making a telephone call, Do you ever rehearse what you're going to say?
What is yours, Abari?
I would say for like tough conversations, for things I'm like nervous or amped up about, I will. Mm. But for everything else, that's like once in a blue moon.
If I was a transphobe, I would think that it means that whatever you're telling me is fake because it sounds scripted.
You didn't say it gender dysphorically.
It's not gender dysphorically. And that's yep. the only way that I can tell.
How about you? Are you a rehearser?
Okay. I liked this one because I used to rehearse what I was going to say because when I was a closeted high school person, if like something funny happened to me, I would like rehearse telling the story. Kind of like in Reservoir Dogs, you know how he like tells that like anecdote of like a funny thing happened to me, but he like rehearses it so it sounds natural. I used to do that and watch my mannerisms. I would do it in front of the mirror to make sure I wasn't doing like limp wrists and like emoting too much of my face.
Oh, sweet baby.
Do I seem straight while I'm telling this? And I would like practice mannerisms to, I don't know. I mean, in my head, I was like, fucking nailed it. I'm straight as hell. Like, look how butch I am. I think in reality, I probably was not good at it.
Yeah. Again, I've seen the family photos.
Yeah, exactly. It was not covering up well. But so I think there's like a little bit of me that still does that. Maybe this is like a born podcaster thing too. If something funny happens to me, I'll be like, how am I going to tell that? Like, what's the best place to start that? Where, like, what are the details I should include? Like, I will sometimes kind of workshop like an anecdote in my, like after I got run over by a truck the other day, I was like, okay, like people are going to ask me like, what happened to your bike? And I will have to tell the story. So I'm like, okay, the best place to start is here. Like these are the questions people are going to ask. I still kind of do a little bit of that in my head.
Smash cut to.
Yeah. I mean,
the
really,
driver's
yeah.
side door opening. Yeah, yeah, totally. Totally. Oh, here we go. Michael, do you have a secret hunch about how you will die?
We have talked about this. I know that I'm going to die when someone is in a Cybertruck on full self-driving and runs me over. This does come from the fact that I was run over by a truck the other day. I am fine.
The other day? What the fuck?
Yeah, like 2 weeks ago, a truck was turning right and the driver did not see me. And
Jesus,
he like
hell, buddy.
Ran over me. And like I jumped off my bike before he ran over me, but like he ran over my bike. And then this hella nice lady behind him in like a minivan, like pulled up like, pulled up to me and was like, fuck that guy, I'm gonna chase him down. And this lady in the minivan like drove up the street, got his license plate and like somehow got his attention and like talked to him and was like, do you know that you like ran over a miniature gentleman like 100 yards back there? And apparently the guy like didn't see me and had no idea. And then she came back and was like, here's the license plate number. Like,
oh, wow.
That was like some Good Samaritan shit. I was like too shaken up to like really do anything, but like she chased this guy down.
A real minivan Avenger.
My friend the other day said it was Karening for good. When Karens help others. Yes.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. What is your hunch about how you'll die?
My answer to this is serious and therefore a bummer.
Well, my last one was a bummer. We can do bummer sometimes. We're bummer as people.
I think much less about how I will die and much more about the narrative that happens when I die.
Oh, yeah.
We all know the bullshit about Mama Cass and the ham sandwich.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We all know the bullshit that fucking circulated when Cat Posse died. We all
yeah,
know,
yeah,
you know
yeah.
what I mean? Like, it's just like every fat activist has the same thing happen, which is they die and a bunch of people celebrate about how they did it to themselves.
It's so fucking gross.
Also, people will make up deaths of fat active. I mean, like, it's really,
yeah.
really, really atrocious. So I think about that often and have done a bunch of writing, like, just sort of for myself.
Mm.
I have a series of fake obituaries that I've written.
What, you really?
Yeah, totally.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
It felt helpful to have something written somewhere that's like, hey, I just want to say, I know all of the things that are about to happen in response to me dying.
Would you like me to run you over in a Cybertruck as a favor to you? And that way, everyone will know exactly how it happened.
Yeah.
Because it'll be kind of funny. I'm sorry. It's not funny. It's not funny. I'm sorry. Like,
it is so funny, and the best part is that you keep apologizing.
Also, like killed by her podcast co-host.
Now there's a story.
I'm sorry. It's so fucked up to joke about killing you. I'm sorry. That's awful.
No, I really enjoyed it. I don't know how much of this stays in the show.
I should have rehearsed that before I said it. I should have rehearsed more. I'm sorry.
Yeah, not enough rehearsing. Ooh. All right, Mike. For what in your life do you feel most grateful, and why is it your podcast co-host?
Yeah, I know. Who I've never joked about killing, who I'm super happy about. The thing is, I'm like such a pessimistic and like dark person.
It may shock our listeners to learn.
Any of these questions that are like, what's your best memory as a child? I'm like, blanks, blanks.
All of your answers are just Werner Herzog.
Yeah. So what is yours?
God, I feel like so many things. The thing that comes to mind is my niece and nephew. Those two, plus like, honestly, my friends' kids, all of my friends' kids are like legitimately cool people. And I really relish being able to be sort of like everybody's aunt.
Oh, yeah.
I will say for my friend Jen's kids, I get to tell them mildly inappropriate stories.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Introduce them to new concepts.
Yeah, like talking to a four-year-old about how like I woke up the other day next to my dog, who normally wakes up with his face right next to my face. It's very cute. Yeah. And the other day flipped himself around. So I woke up and instead of having his face right next to my face, his butt was right next to me.
But that's how he forms friendships. He doesn't do the 36 questions. He does 36 butt sniffs.
That is his 36 questions.
Yeah. Sniff my butt to fall in love.
But also, you tell that stuff to a four-year-old who thinks like poop is a bad word.
Dude, do you want to hear the sickest fucking burn I've ever gotten in my life?
Yes, please.
This is so bizarre. Dude, we were like at my friend's like cabin something something in Eastern Washington, and it's like in this oasis in the middle of the desert, and there's like a swimming pool. And I was like probably 19 or something. I was with like a bunch of high school friends. And there's like, it's like a little like resort kind of like summer resort thing. And so there's like kids splashing around. And so somehow this kid who's like 6 years old, like somehow he like figured out my name. I think he like heard us talking, and he came over and he sort of tapped me on the shoulder and he's like, is your name Mike? And I was like, yes, it is. And he goes, Mike pees the most. And I was like, oh, what does that even mean? And then my friends were like, damn, son. Destroyed by this child. And fucking to this day, my friends would be like, is that because you pee the most? Mike? Oh, yeah. This is my friend Mike. He pees the most. Like, I don't even know what it means.
I mean, I think the worst case scenario is like, it just means you're very hydrated.
Dewy skin.
Totally.
Hydrated.
Mike always has a Nalgene with him.
I've never gotten over it.
So when my niece and nephew were much younger, they were both super into all of the Despicable Me movies. So I found them for Christmas, these slippers that were Minions.
Nice.
And my niece opened hers and we're like, these are awesome. Thanks. And she like put them on. And my nephew opened his and he took them over to his mom and just quietly went, I don't want to wear them or to have them.
Oh, my God. Dude, getting owned by children hurts so much worse than like, adults.
It wasn't even, it was like,
damn.
I fucking know what you're about to say. I don't want to wear them. I also don't want to have them get these out of my house.
I don't
want to
be associated with them. I want them deplatformed.
Also, fully like 2 weeks later, I got a picture from his mom being like, he was like in his Minion slippers. And I was like, what? And she's like, he's insisting on wearing them to school now.
Oh,
I was
like, but that's a good epilogue though. So you were a good gifter.
Sort of.
What I'm most grateful for is a podcast host who's very good at humble brags.
Oh,
kid insulted me, but he was incorrect. I'm actually the best at giving gifts to children.
Okay, Mike, I'm particularly interested in this next question for you.
Do we want to do this? I mean, we can do this. It's fine.
I want to do it because it, implicit in this is a question that I have been absolutely desperate to ask you for a very long time.
Ooh.
So the question as it's written is, take 4 minutes and tell your partner your life story in as much detail as
possible. We're not doing four minutes.
However, embedded in this question is, I think, a requirement to actually just fucking list all the jobs that you've had.
Dude, no, 4 minutes is not enough. I've done so much weird shit.
I'll just be talking to you and you'll be like, that's like when I was working at the UN. And then like 4 minutes later, you'll be like, it's like when I was selling steak knives. And I'll be like, what the fuck?
Well,
Who are you?
I had a million fucking jobs, but also I had 7 internships before my first like job. Yeah. And even within human rights, I ended up doing like 10 different things. I'm sure you were the same at your NGOs. They're like, we need someone to design the website. And you're like, I guess I'm a website designer now.
Right. I talk about the different campaigns that I worked on. It sounds like I'm 65 and ready for retirement.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was born in Forest Grove, Oregon, to a, like a, at the time, I think my mom was a professor of early childhood education. And my dad was a pilot and a union steward. Throughout my childhood, I bounced back and forth between a bunch of different schools. I think I went to 7 schools by the time I hit 6th grade, in part just because I would follow like wherever my mom was teaching. In when I was in middle school, she got a job at the hoity-toityest school in town that offered 90% tuition remission. So we paid 10% of the tuition, and I went to a fancy pants school.
Oh, yeah. That's how you know things about like elite rich people stuff.
Well, that's from high school, but also from college. I would say maybe more from college than high school.
Are you finally going to say on the show where you went to college?
No,
I'm
not.
I hate
it so fucking much.
It's funny to me that this is like the biggest fucking secret in like Aubrey Gordon's life. It's just the basic thing of where she went to college.
It's not a secret. I just don't talk about
it. I hate it so much. It's like a good school. You're like so nervous.
It's a good
school. That'd be funny that you went to a good school.
It's just weird. I feel weird about it. So after high school, I took a gap year and worked as a kindergarten classroom assistant / school secretary.
Oh.
Then I started college. I split college between 2 different schools. The first school that I went to was Portland State University Portland. And then I transferred.
What's the second school?
Okay. I don't want this from you. This
is an old LinkedIn profile.
I hate it
so
much.
Credentials?
What do I do to make this sound stop?
Aubrey's credentials.
And then I transferred away halfway through to Brown.
Brown.
And finished at Brown.
Aubrey is like weird about the fact that she went to Brown. Brown is a really good school.
It is. And also it's sort of like Oberlin in that it is a weird like liberal college lightning rod kind of school.
Yeah.
And also people have all of their weird and correct feelings about Ivy League schools. So like people have weird reactions on that front. Like, whoa, look at
like I'm doing right now.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm like, I'm a 40-year-old adult. That was almost half my life ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just feels immaterial.
Also, I feel like if you work in like social justice-y spaces, to be like, yes, I did go to a college that costs like $90,000 a year. It's just like a little awkward.
90 might be an undersell at this
point. Yeah. I don't even know what these schools cost because I didn't get into any of them. Boom.
At Brown, I just powered through in as short a time as I could. And my deal with myself that I made was that I would say yes to as many things as possible. And so I just said yes to a bunch of stuff. It was great.
And what did that get you involved in? Were you in like random clubs and stuff?
I had like a play produced that I had written.
What?
Like all yeah, totally. Like it's
dude,
great.
Dude, where great. Is it? Where's the play?
I wrote a bunch of plays. I majored in gender studies and playwriting.
Oh, so one fake thing and one real thing. That's interesting.
Which one fake do you one think thing? Is the real one?
Okay, maybe 2 fake things. Fine.
And then I took a ton of classes in their like semiotics department, but didn't major in it. Yeah, I'm insufferable, dude.
Oh my God, wow.
You want to know why I don't talk about this
shit? Oh my God.
Because then I end up talking about Foucault for 45 minutes and everyone wants me dead.
Dude, you know my feelings on Foucault.
If you mention the fucking panopticon to me one more time,
dude,
I swear to God.
Now I understand why you don't mention it. I went in the semiotics department at Brown.
Yes, it sucks. I suck.
Someone do not tell Fox News. This,
truly.
This fat activist studied semiotics at Brown.
She majored in postmodernism.
I know.
Like, not really, but kind of.
And her co-host pees the most. If there's anything we need to know about these two people.
From there, I started organizing. I moved back to Oregon and did a bunch of LGBT organizing, immigrant rights organizing. Mm-hmm. And after about a dozen years of that-ish, I took the plunge into writing and then podcasting.
And then there's a film about this journey.
And then from there is a film. Yes, from that point forward, there is a film.
And here we are. This is like Furiosa. This is like a little prequel leading us up to the present.
How about you, buddy?
Born Seattle, mother pastor, father He was a dentistry professor. So most of my life, he was like a university professor in the dental school. But then he eventually became a dentist. So I either tell people that like my dad was a college professor or like my dad was a dentist.
God.
Both of which are more or less true.
I'm just realizing how much you and I both have professors' kids energy.
The only thing more insufferable Whoa. Than theater kids is Whoa, professors' kids.
Michael, some of us are both.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And then I realized that I was gay when I was like 12. And then I was at public school, which was like not super duper homophobic, but like definitely not comfortable. So I kind of, I don't know if you guys had this thing in Oregon, but we had this thing in Washington called Running Start, where you could take community college classes as a high schooler.
Oh, sure.
The idea was that you go and you take like English 101. So you have the credit by the time you go to college. And so you can kind of skip some of the kind of general university requirements in college. But then people figured out, I still don't really know if this is like intended or not, that you could just do a full load of classes at community college and yeah. effectively drop out of high school and go to community college 2 years early. So as a 16-year-old, you can just take a full load of classes at community college and get your associate's degree
yeah.
when you're 18 and then go to college and graduate when you're 20. So you can basically do high school and college in 6 years rather than 8 years.
Yeah.
And so I did that, and my whole plan was to like come out of the closet and like be openly gay at community college. But then I chickened out the first day. The guy there was sitting next to this guy in class, and he's like, "What do you think of the chicks here?" And I was like, "I love their boobs, man."
Oh,
I just like
no,
kept doing
Michael.
My like fake straight thing. I was like, "Fuck."
The thing that you don't really learn until you stop doing it is that the shit you do to try and convince other people that you're straight is exactly the shit that makes them go, "That's a gay person."
No, 100%. Again, I don't think I was good at it. I don't think I was skilled.
Klieg light.
I wasn't like one of those, like, I just wanted to be invisible gay kids. I was like stentorianly heterosexual. Like, I pretended to have crushes on girls and stuff. I deeply, deeply regret this. I've written about it numerous times. It was like awful and like wildly unethical. But then this same guy who, like, I was just making small talk with him on the first day of community college. I was like, "Oh, what are you up to after class? Whatever." And he's like, "Oh, I'm going down to the student newspaper at our community college because they pay $400 a month
Whoa.
To be a reporter." And I was like, $400 a month? Which is like gold fucking doubloons at like age 16.
Yeah, totally.
And so I started working at the student newspaper, my community college, the Polaris. And then I ended up transferring to Western Washington University.
Woo-woo!
And then I ended up going to grad school twice, once in London and once in Denmark, mostly because I wanted a visa. And this is the thing to actually tell your children, is that studying abroad, like if you do your, not if you do like a semester abroad, but if you do your entire degree abroad, it's cheap as fuck. So like I looked at Columbia University, which I never would have gotten into, but their journalism master's was like $60,000 a year. And then when I studied in London, it was $10,000 a year.
That's your 90% tuition remission.
Yeah, I mean, that was it. Like, it was fucking great.
Totally.
And then, you know, you get like subsidized housing in London, which was awesome. After that, I was like, this is like a great loophole to get like visas to like live in dope ass countries. So then I went to Denmark and did another master's degree.
What was your second master's in?
Oh, God. European studies.
Oh,
whatever the fuck
no.
that means. It was just like European
oh,
history
no.
institutions.
Now who's got the fake one?
I know, dude. My first one is fake, too. Political theory. Come on. And then, yeah, I ended up getting an internship in Copenhagen in human rights, which then became a career in human rights. And then that, after, I don't know, 8 or 9 years or something, I started writing like little essays and blog posts on like my evenings and weekends in my spare time. And then eventually, like, they got noticed on the internet, and then HuffPost was like, "Let's give you a job." And then here I am.
The thing that happened, I think, for me is probably similar to the thing that happened for you, which is just like, I got a bunch of ideas.
Mm.
I got a bunch of thoughts, and I'm writing them down. Whether
yeah.
or not anybody reads them.
Yeah.
Is like a little bit beside the point, certainly
yeah.
in those early stages, right?
Mm.
I think it took, how long did it take? Like 2 years before I was like getting paid anything with any frequency.
Oh, yeah, same. Oh, yeah.
You just do it for free for a long time.
Yes.
I say that because a bunch of people will ask me that at events.
Yeah.
A bunch of people will reach out to us and be like, "How do you do it?" And I'm like,
yeah.
"God, the answer sucks."
Dude, and also the latter, like, has been pulled up behind us, because like the way that I got noticed on the internet was like I got linked to by, this is so embarrassing, Andrew Sullivan's blog a couple times. Who's like a nightmare. Like, he's always kind of been a nightmare, but he's like extra nightmare now. But it was like, that was like the blog. That was like the pipeline. And I think I was even added to his like blog role at some point.
Yeah.
But now there's no fucking blogs. So I don't I can't like give people advice. We always get asked like, how do you like make it as a journalist? And I'm like, I literally have no fucking idea, because like the route that both of us took is basically closed now. I don't like, I guess social media would be involved in a way that it was not for us.
And also like media is crumbling all around us.
Yeah, it's really bad.
If you feel not sad enough.
I know, here we are recommending other sad things to you in our alleged happy episode.
Okay, Michael.
Aubrey.
If you could wake up tomorrow having gained any one quality or ability, what would it be?
I didn't want to do this one because I was like, invisibility, obviously. But I think you meant like not superpowers.
No, like direct communication. Like, I wish I was more romantic with my partner or whatever.
I immediately thought of X-Men. I was like, Magneto. Boom.
Your note, I'm looking at the Google Doc right now. Your note says, I want to skip this one because everyone always says invisibility.
Which everyone does. That's objectively the best answer to this. But you meant as like a person.
How would you like to improve as a human being?
But what is your answer?
I have a bunch of anxiety around communication stuff. I'm like just super bad at email.
You're such a good communicator.
No, not in that way.
Oh, yeah.
So I wish... And like I'm sort of constantly banging my head against the wall, trying to find new approaches to get myself out of that particular communication anxiety rut, because it makes me really unresponsive. And that sucks to be around.
I am also very unresponsive on email, but I do not wish to change it. I think it's fine. I think people should learn not to contact me for any reason. Hopefully I am training them like an orca to just simply give up on trying to get a hold of me. So this is the difference between us.
Yeah. So that's like a big one. That's probably my biggest like, hey man, snap out of it kind of thing with myself.
Yeah.
How about you?
You know, I've always admired people that can just like have a situation and are like, you know what, maybe this will work out and maybe it won't, but like, I'm just not going to stress out about it.
Yeah.
I can't do that. I don't have that function as a human being.
Yeah.
So if there's an option of something going wrong, I will like ruminate on it and like lose my fucking mind. And if I can't think of anything in the near future, I will fast forward until I find something to like freak out about. I'm like, oh, but in like 11 years, this thing will happen.
Yeah, totally.
I feel like
totally.
Both of us are like anxious little babies, but you're better at managing it than I am.
One of the things that I think is a big difference is I was raised by someone with a counseling degree.
Whereas I was raised by people with undiagnosed anxiety.
Okay.
So I absorbed it all and am now replicating it.
Thing B is like, I started my first time going to therapy was when I was like 6.
Oh, really? For like individual therapy?
Yeah, I was.
Oh, wow.
We talked about fire safety at my school and I started having nightmares and all consuming
fears. Oh my God.
Our house was going to burn down. And not that I would be trapped inside, but that I would get out and my whole family would stay trapped.
Oh, Aubrey.
Again, hello and welcome to panic disorder.
Yeah.
You know, so I started therapy super duper early and was off and on in therapy like since, you know, pretty early in childhood.
Wow.
It just gives you a lot of time to make your peace with like, hey, man, my brain works this way.
Yeah.
And I think you are much newer to this way of thinking about your brain.
Yeah, you have. I've gotten like way, like I didn't really struggle with anxiety pre-pandemic, but for whatever reason, I'm like way like lower functioning and higher anxiety since the pandemic for reasons I don't really understand. But you've also given me many pieces of wisdom over the years, like shut the fuck up and stop worrying about it.
The greatest wisdom I have.
We don't
to
need
offer.
To talk about this again.
No one wants to hear it, Michael.
Fucking relax. God. Yeah, that's what most of our interactions are like. People can tell from the show. People can tell.
Totally.
Cruel,
that's how we talk to each other.
Woman, a cruel woman. Can I tell an anxiety story real quick?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So as you know, I have like all these different like medical things. I have like an ear thing and like a knee thing. And like I also have this like sleep thing.
You got a wax skeleton.
I have the wax skeleton thing, my asymmetries. And then I also have like a psychiatrist and a psychologist and I just have like all this stuff. And so I, as you know, I got like really sick with whatever the fuck it was over the winter. And so for like 8 weeks, I like didn't have any appointments on any of my things because they all like I had to cancel all of my appointments. Finally, in the spring, I started like putting things back on the schedule. And so I just like made all these calls and I was like this thing and this thing and this thing. I had like a million appointments. And so at one point I have an appointment with my psychologist. And so I like get on Zoom. And we go through the like boring like screening questions. And then he's like, so why are you here to see me today? And I was like, well, I have this like anxiety thing and I ruminate a lot and I, you know, struggle with self-esteem and I've been working on it for a while. And he's like, are you seeing a therapist about that? And I was like, what, like, am I having a dream right now? Like what? I was like, yes, I'm seeing a therapist right now. I'm seeing you. And then he goes, I'm your psychiatrist. I don't do like counseling.
Right. I'm the meds guy.
Yeah. I'm the meds guy. But like both my psychiatrist and my psychologist are like middle-aged white dudes with beards. But I didn't want to tell him like, oh yeah, you look just like my like generic middle-aged guy psychologist. So I was like, oh God, I must have like put it in my phone wrong or something. And then he goes into like little baby voice and he's like, there's actually two different kinds of mental health medical practitioners.
No.
A psychiatrist goes to medical school. I'm like, I know the basic thing, but you just both look the same. And so I was so embarrassed. And then he's like, I don't really work on that, but I know that, you know, since you're having anxiety, have you tried just like not worrying about things that you like don't have control over?
Oh my God.
And I was like,
are you
kidding me? Now I see why you're the medicine guy and not the counseling guy, because you fucking suck at this.
Yeah.
I was like, I shouldn't do the thing. Ah, okay. Wow, thanks, man. I'll cancel my appointment with the other guy then.
I understand that you have glaucoma, but let's try this one out. What if you didn't?
Yeah, have you tried seeing? Just see. I think you should look and see.
Boy, oh boy, oh boy.
Anyway, that was all of my anecdotes are embarrassing things. None of my anecdotes are me being cool.
So you looked a little bit at the science behind this. I initially was sort of like, I assume there is none and it's all bullshit.
You are correct. Okay, the thing is, we're not going to go too deep into this. Basically, I just think all of these frameworks are like kind of funny because ultimately I think this stuff is mostly harmless. I think it's very similar to like the love languages, which is like completely made up by this random fucking guy, right? There's no science behind it whatsoever. But also, it's a nice excuse to like talk with your partner about like what ways are you receptive to affection and like what ways do you like to show affection? I think that's like a really productive conversation, even if ultimately the five love languages are like fundamentally quite arbitrary. And so I think these 36 questions are like fundamentally relatively arbitrary, but I actually really like the idea of deliberately forming intimacy.
Yeah, same
thing. I think this is like a very productive exercise in general.
Yeah.
I also think it's very funny that like the way that it's framed quite explicitly is like 36 questions to fall in love. The New York Times article in 2015 that like popularized this, the headline is "To Fall in Love with Anyone, Do This."
That's how you know this piece came out before incel discourse.
Yeah.
Like, this just seems like one of those things where you're like, it wasn't that long ago, but we have gone through a quantum leap in the way that we think about this shit.
So this whole kind of science in these 36 questions is based on one study, which is actually three separate studies. All of the studies are, of course, based on college undergraduates. So there's like a big introduction to psychology course, and they recruit participants from this course. So already we're in, like, it's not falling in love with anyone. It's falling in love with someone in the same class as you, who goes to the same college as you, who's the same age as you.
How to fall in love with your classmate, Olivia Jade.
The first study, I loved this. So they take a bunch of students, they split them up into groups. They're doing like a control group and a treatment group, right? And so they're trying to see, like, is there something special about these intimacy generating questions? Or is it just like you're talking to a stranger for 45 minutes and at the end you think they're really cool, right? Like, does it actually matter which 36 questions you're doing? So half of them get the intimacy 36 questions to fall in love, and the other half get 36 questions to like deliberately not fall in love. So they come up with this list of like the most shallow, like least interesting small talk questions.
That's super funny.
I was gonna send you a list of them because I think the exercise of like, what are the most boring questions you could possibly ask another person?
Oh my God.
All right, so I'm gonna send these to you.
It's just gonna be a bunch of shit I already do, huh?
Well, I'm getting flashbacks to like the worst fucking dates I've ever been on.
Oh no.
So yeah, so just as a reminder, the intimacy forming ones are like, what was your mother like? When was the last time you cried? There's all these things about like your childhood. How do you, like these kind of deep values things. And so here's this list of like the exact opposite of that.
If you could invent a new flavor of ice cream, what would it be?
Fascinating.
What gifts did you receive on your last birthday? God, they're gonna do like, tell me about your dream.
Yeah, I know. God, just conversation killers.
Describe the last time you went to the zoo.
I saw some animals. I saw different animals.
Tell the names and ages of your family members, include grandparents, aunts, and uncles, and where they were born.
I would want to die if somebody did this.
What foreign country would you most like to visit?
It's not even which countries have you visited, which can be kind of boring, but it's like way better than which country would you like to visit? Like, what are you going to say about it? You don't know anything about it. You haven't been there.
Do you prefer digital watches and clocks or the kind with hands?
Yeah.
Why?
Let's clear our day, Aubrey, and talk about this for hours.
This feels worded in the like, hey, fucking dummy, come on over here kind of way that like I went car shopping at one point in my... would have been my early 30s. And my God, the condescension that I got.
Oh, yeah.
There was one person who was like, do you want a car where you make it shift or it shifts on its own?
That's so fucking funny.
And I was like, are you asking me if I want a stick or an automatic?
Dude, that's like the psychologist psychiatrist thing.
And he went, look at you. And I was like, I will end you. Somebody called me little lady. And I was like, no part of that applies to me.
My God.
Every part of it is wrong. Okay. What is the last concert you saw? How many of that band's albums do you own? God.
Oh my God.
What do you need to pick up at the store later?
Yeah.
What bills haven't you paid this month?
The thing is, I do think that people need like specific skills to form intimacy. I feel like they're like, one thing I like about these 36 questions, the intimacy forming ones, is that like, yeah, there are some questions that are like pretty good at yielding interesting conversations.
Absolutely.
And I also feel like it's very important for like the population to know that like there are some conversation starters that are just bad.
Would you invent a flavor of ice cream though? Is there one that you're like, we
don't
have?
Oh my fucking God, I'm already bored even just in the 2 seconds it took you to ask that. Jesus Christ. So at the end of this, they ask both people, like, how intimate, how close do you feel with this conversation partner of yours, right? And so there's two different measures that they use, but they merge them together. It's like on a scale of 1 to 7, how close do you feel with this person who you either did the horrible small talk questions or like the intimate small talk questions? And for the intimacy questions, the score was 4 out of 7. For the small talk questions, the score was 3.25. It just isn't that big of a difference.
But Michael, we're in love now.
It doesn't seem that much better than like the miserable questions. It might just be you're in a room with someone else for 45 minutes.
Yes.
Like these intimacy forming questions, if I had to do this with like a Trump voter or like a homophobe, or even someone like, I don't know, like a 6-year-old or something, like someone just in a completely different frame of reference, at the end, I would not feel any closer to this person.
I feel like I just learned a lot about the taxonomies in your brain.
Yeah, there's Trump voters and children.
Trump voters, homophobes, children. Yeah. The same.
I'm like, how do I want to spend my day? Who are the people I don't want to spend my day with? I should actually say, too, that they say in the study, this is in the introduction of the study, they say, we should also emphasize that the goal of the procedure was to develop a temporary feeling of closeness, not an actual ongoing relationship.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
So these can also be like manipulated, right? These can also be like a tool of manipulation as well to form like a false intimacy with somebody.
I'm sure.
So anyway, let's
I'm
continue sure. with the fake thing that we're doing.
Where are we? Oh, you're highlighting. Thank you.
14. Oh, you can see that?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, do you not know this about Google Docs? Look at that. You can see me. Look at that.
Okay. I just like click on text as like a fidget thing because I'm like a nervous person.
Is there anything you've dreamed of doing for a long time? And if so, why haven't you done it?
Anal.
Michael.
Fuck. I thought that would get you.
Michael, if you're not going to take this fake thing seriously.
Fuck. I don't know you at all. I thought that would totally get you. Aubrey, what is the greatest accomplishment of your life? You put all these positive ones in.
I did put in positive ones.
I don't have any.
I would say greatest accomplishment was the trans healthcare campaign.
I mean, it went in place, right? It's
went
now covered.
In place. And like, there are now many people that I know who are accessing care through the Oregon Health Plan, which is our public health insurance, and a number of other health insurance plans that we specifically worked on.
Cool.
And that feels huge. The first person to get any kind of surgical care for like trans-specific surgical care under the Oregon Health Plan was my late best friend.
Oh, yeah.
She and I met on that campaign. That's how we knew each other. And like, as a result of her work, she got to get surgery and got to get like all of the sort of medical transition stuff that she wanted and needed.
Yeah.
And I just got to watch her entire life change.
I feel like the thing that is similar between us is we both worked in sort of NGO world. And the difference is that you actually achieved something with your career. I feel like mine.
You're like, mine is a report that I wrote.
Exactly.
And it got filed on our Google Drive.
It's somewhere out there, or like a speech that we gave that no one listened to or ever returned to or gave a shit about.
How about you? Greatest accomplishment?
I mean, all of mine are like interpersonal related. I think my biggest one was like, I'm like a socially anxious person, and like I realized when I moved abroad that I had to be more deliberate in forming friendships. And a friend of mine, when I lived in Copenhagen, the first year that I was there, came down with IBS, kind of like he had these mysterious symptoms. And then he was losing tons of weight, just like losing and losing and losing weight and really sick. And then he finally got diagnosed. And then like I sort of went on this quest to like help him like gain the weight back. And so every Wednesday I would try to cook like the most like calorific meal that I could. And I would invite him over and like we would joke about like fattening him up. And like getting him back to normal and like working with him to like, what could he eat? What could he not eat stuff? And then I also like started inviting other people, and it became this like kind of thing at my house every Wednesday.
Oh, I love this.
And then, yeah, we just like kept doing that. And I was like, oh, this is like actually nice. And like, I'm not going to take any credit for him getting better, but he did get better. And also like we sort of formed like a sort of little urban tribe around like having meals at my house. And I also learned to cook at that time. And it was just like, I wanted to have like a group of friends so bad, and like to form a group of friends. And I was like able to do that from scratch. And I felt really good about it.
No, I appreciate that so much. And I feel like, look, there's one kind of relationship that we talk about taking work, and that's marriage.
Yeah.
And we don't actually say that about other kinds of relationships. So there's sort of this like underlying assumption that if it takes work, you're like doing it wrong or something.
Yeah.
And that like, your friendships and any other kind of relationship don't need tending to in the same kind of way as like a romantic relationship. But like, man, oh man, those friend groups will like carry you the fuck through.
Yeah. And a lot of romantic relationships do not last. And so you want to have people around when they don't.
So when the documentary premiered, I was like holding it together with popsicles and scotch tape.
Yeah.
Just emotionally. Mm. Popsicles. Popsicle sticks. What?
Well, popsicles works too, because they're also structurally flimsy.
Just very quietly, without really being asked, I was informed that one of my biggest and longest standing friend groups had just quietly self-organized, and they were like, we're just going to be there.
That's great.
You don't have, we're all flying out from Montana to New York.
That's great.
We're just going to be there.
Mm.
And it was like one of the most wonderful supportive things.
Yeah, it's really lovely.
That I could have, I wouldn't even have imagined asking anyone to do that. I wouldn't even have crossed my mind that that would have been a good and helpful thing. And it was so wonderful to have a friend group there where people were just like, I think she needs this.
I don't like choke up at sad things. I always choke up at like nice things that people do for each other.
Michael, if you were going to become a close friend with your partner, please share what would be important for her to know.
Well, this is less important for you because
if hypothetically we were going
if we
to
were
be
to become friends.
Friends,
I feel like a really important thing. Also, another, I think, very important aspect of friendship is people giving you like genuine feedback of like things that you do that are kind of sucky.
Yes.
Numerous like independent arbiters have like mentioned this to me are like, you're kind of a dick in the morning. Like the first 2 hours of the day, you know, you like go and like get a weekend away with your friends or whatever. People are like, yeah, Mike's a little dicey before like 8 a.m. And so I do not remember this, but a friend of mine was telling me recently, like his grandparents had some house like out in on the coast of Washington. And we went out there. God, it was a community college friend of mine. So I was like, I guess 17 or something. And I guess like he got up a little bit earlier than me. And I came down, he's like, hey, I'm making waffles. And apparently I was like, make a waffle and give me a waffle.
I don't want to wear them or to have them.
I felt so bad.
I really love that as an answer.
Also the evenings.
Midday's not great.
Afternoons. I would say 11:15 to roughly 11:30 is when I'm okay. What are yours? What would your warnings be? What are your red flags? How are you problematic, Aubrey? Announce it to the whole internet right now.
I would say related to anxiety-related non-responsiveness is that when I am a depressed person, which is when my mental health is not where it ought to be, I just like go under for a while.
Oh, you turtle shell? You just like
withdraw? Yeah, I totally turtle shell. Yeah. It's like my great mountain to climb of emotional work is like, how do you figure out how to do this thing? Mm. I feel like the thing to know is that I like emotionally kind of go under.
How do you usually snap out of it?
So part of what happens is I sort of retreat into myself and then people text or call and are like, hey, how are you? Are you okay? What do you need? Blah, blah, blah. And then it makes me anxious to respond to them.
Yeah.
And then I feel like shit for not having response. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's just a self-talk spiral situation. And finally, what ends up happening is I strong arm myself into responding. And then that feels like such a big, like, you did it. Then I'm like, I've earned a week long break from responding to
it. I'm also a big fan of like texting / emailing amnesty.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, you owe me a text, but also like, whatever.
I feel the same way. Like, people will respond to me from emails from like a year ago. And I'm like, hey, man, you did it.
Yeah, exactly. Right on. And like, things fall through the cracks and it's not that big of a deal. And like, sometimes people will just check in on me again, or like I will check in on them again. Like it just happens. It's like we all can kind of forgive each other for this stuff. I was carrying around so much guilt for so long. There was a friend of mine during the pandemic, like during like the worst of the pandemic, we were like essentially just trapped inside, and he just sent me a like, hey, how you holding up text, and I like couldn't think of anything to say, and I was like, oh god, like I'm really struggling, but I didn't want to like do that in a text message. And then like a day went by, and then a week went by, and then a month went by, and then 6 months went by, and I felt so bad. And like every once in a while I'd be like, oh god, I never answered that text. I felt so fucking terrible about it, but I was just like so paralyzed. And then after 6 months, I'm like, well, I can't like write back now when like I've already basically abandoned this person. And it felt like absolute shit. And then finally, you know, I think we bumped into each other somewhere in Seattle. And I was like, the first thing I like grabbed him was like, I'm so fucking sorry that I didn't answer your text. I feel like such a piece of shit. And of course he's like, dude, it's totally fine. Like same thing happened to me. And we've since like sort of reconnected and he's great. But it's like, I just carried around so much guilt about this one like hanging text in my inbox.
Well, look, I mean, I feel like this gets at a thing that has been on my mind lately, which is essentially like, certainly since lockdown started, maybe since the beginning of the Trump administration, maybe since Brexit, like depends on who you ask and sort of what their starting point is. It just feels like pretty much all of us are emotionally hanging on by a thread.
Dude.
And have been for a really long time.
Yeah. I know a guy who's like so far gone, he can't even tell the difference between his psychiatrist and his psychologist.
Okay. All just right.
Ruined
Are
as
we
a person.
There?
No. Sorry.
We've all just been like hanging on, like white knuckling it through.
Yeah.
For like 5 to 10 years now.
Yeah. Trump was elected 8 years ago. It's been eight years of like the sense of just total surreality.
I would have said we've all been running on fumes, but like the fumes ran out a long time ago. And I think many/most of us are trying to push through as if this is a normal situation, as if our existing like work capacities and attentional capacities and all of that kind of stuff should still hold true. And it shouldn't. There's like a genocide happening. There's like this weird open season on like trans people happening. There's a global rise of right-wing strongmen happening. Like, it's bad out there. And I think in seeking to sort of protect ourselves and shield ourselves from the badness, we also end up consequently like not acknowledging the toll that the badness is taking on us.
I like how you took our happy episode, you made it sad.
Absolutely. Just taking good news, turning it into bad news.